Welcome to another AFCON WOW Aviation Consulting Company podcast hosted by Paul Ritchie. Reason for this and other AFCON podcast is to bring interesting and relevant news and information to podcast listeners as to things and issues that matter to the aviation industry. For those of us fortunate enough to be part of this industry, we can say that it is never routine that all of its participants need to be able to turn on a dime as we navigate through new challenges as they arise. On today's show, we're honored to be able to welcome Mr. Chris Wood, the manager of the Waterloo International Airport. Welcome, Chris.
Hi, Paul.
So, Chris, tell us a bit about yourself as to the development of your career and what motivated you to move into your current position to oversee the growth, development, and operations of Waterloo International Airport.
Well, thanks for having me, Paul. I'm honored to be on this podcast and talk to some people in the industry. Maybe full disclosure, you and I have a history, and I used to work at the Greater Toronto Airports Authority with you. Actually, you were my boss for a few years, and we got to work together. So, you know, I did start my career at the GTAA and loved every minute of it. After spending some time at Georgian College in their aviation management program, I worked at the GTAA at Pearson Airport in a number of different jobs. Had a great time, got to work on, as you know, some exciting projects. Helping open the terminal building is still a highlight of my career. But I always wanted something more at a smaller airport. I really believe I have my dream job now. It's, we are an up-and-coming, growing site. We've always been a very busy airport, but now we're growing into a busier commercial airport, which is a big transition. So I'm having a great time. I love every minute of being in this industry. And, some days I pinch myself that, I actually get paid to do this. So.
Absolutely. I can certainly understand. I can relate to what you're saying. I mean, you and I certainly had many adventures together as we move forward. And, I guess you are a man who wears all hats, right? I mean, at a small airport, you don't have separate departments to handle all types of things. I guess you wear many hats as the manager of the airport. Is that true?
Yeah, to a certain extent. We have some departments. They may just be one person. But, for sure. We're a small but mighty team. We all have to help each other. And, I think that's really one of the things that attracted me to this job is maybe I get too bored working on one thing. So, this job, I get to deal with a lot of different things. And it's challenging, it's exciting, and very rewarding.
Absolutely. But for the benefit of the listeners, can you share a bit about the history and development of the airport and its current facilities?
Yeah, so the airport is, 72 years old now in this location. It opened just in 1950. So I guess, so next year will be 72 years. But it's always been a general aviation airport, and it's always been a non-Transport Canada airport. So it's never been owned or operated by the federal government, which is a little different. Most airports in Canada did have some federal involvement, whether it be DND or Transport Canada, as you know. But this has always been flight training has been a big part of this airport, still is. But we are really trying to grow the commercial side and take advantage of some of prior to COVID, some of the, opportunities that existed in the Greater Toronto Area. So the airport is currently owned and operated by the Regional Municipality of Waterloo, which is, again, a bit of a unique situation. There aren't many airports left in Canada that are owned and operated by the municipality. We are. I am a municipal employee. Most of them are, you know, a lot of airports are still owned by municipalities, but not operated by, but we are.
Right.
And I think that our regional government really understands the reason for having this airport. And I often give them a lot of credit because they had the foresight to invest in this airport and to develop it and build it into what it is today. And they continue to support our ambitions and goals for the region, and to that's to provide, you know, a place where businesses can thrive, where people can travel to and from our community, and provide a thriving airport for a growing community. And I really applaud them for buying into that vision.
Well, certainly it's very impressive. I've watched from a distance and through SOAN and other initiatives, the incredible support from the region and the understanding and the patience, right? The patience, yes, to take the time to develop and then continue, keep working to get business and never give up. And that's very impressive. You know, they even during the worst of the pandemic, the region of Waterloo, as I understand it, was still supportive of the airport and still believed in its future. Is that true?
Absolutely. We're not through the pandemic yet. And, this month we've spent about $25 million on expansion that is about to break ground in 2 or 3 weeks. So we've continued, and there's good reason to do that, but we are continuing to build this into a world-class airport.
So tell us something about the current and future growth prospects of the region of Waterloo from a population, economic, research, education, and perhaps even tourist perspective.
Yeah, so, well, you know, again, the pandemic has changed things, but prior to the pandemic, I believe we were the fastest growing region in Canada, if not, we're one of the top. And, our universities, our research companies and high-tech companies are really driving that. Manufacturing has also rebounded. People are moving here. You know, the house prices are still somewhat reasonable in Waterloo region, although getting a little less reasonable. But this was an area that people really wanted to live, work, and play in. And, the airport is, I guess, has always been sort of a missing link. And, you know, I can't think of another world-class city like the region of Waterloo and Kitchener-Cambridge-Waterloo that does not have a thriving airport. So that's really the vision. People bought into that, and we're trying to make that happen.
So there are airports around you, and there are airports that surround you. How do they complement or perhaps even compete with Waterloo International Airport?
You know what? It's a really unique kind of business, and you'll know this, but airports on one hand are competitors, but on the other hand, we're huge. We help each other a lot. And I think you mentioned SOAN earlier, the Southern Ontario Airport Network. That really was the brainchild of Pearson Airport and the GTAA that thought it was about time that all these airports in Southern Ontario got together to talk about the common things, to talk about how we can compete better as a region or as Southern Ontario, as opposed to 11 different airports competing and trying to find our way. So definitely, you know, we're very blessed in Southern Ontario to have great airport assets. You know, I can drive an hour in three directions and be at three great airports. So, no other area of Canada really can say that. Maybe New Brunswick. They have three pretty good airports too, within about an hour and a half of each other. So, but we're very fortunate. I think we do compete. However, there's also the corresponding population in order to maybe everyone can succeed. You know, so much so that the federal government is still carrying on the conversation about Pickering one day. So there could be another one in the greater Toronto area that could also play a role. I don't think that will happen in my lifetime, but
likewise.
But I think we're very blessed in this area to have such great assets.
Because the airports play such a major role to the economic well-being and growth of any community, and you know, in order
they
to
do.
Be connected, is important, and even for the convenience of the local people who live in Kitchener-Waterloo. You know, if you want to go on a vacation, you get on an airplane in your backyard, right, and head out versus having to drive a distance. And traffic, of course, is always a challenge, and will continue to be a challenge. So why not use what you have in your backyard?
Correct, and that's really what we've focused on. We know that there's millions of people that leave our region to get on an airplane elsewhere in the greater Toronto area. So, you know, why not offer that option to them locally?
So the pandemic has hit the aviation industry pretty hard, as we all know. But yet, some really exciting things are happening at your airport as to new scheduled and charter passenger operations. Can you share with the listeners some of the particular details related to these new exciting services?
Yeah, so I think your first statement about the pandemic hitting this industry hard is, an understatement. It's
I'm being polite.
It's been absolutely devastating for airports, but also air carriers and a lot of businesses. But in this industry, for sure, a lot of people have suffered. But it's also, I would say it's also leveled the playing field a little bit where, you know, in Canada, we had two major airlines dominate for so long. I think the pandemic has probably hurt, some of those carriers, legacy carriers, a little bit more. And it's given an opportunity to other carriers or want to be carriers to maybe, you know, have a bit of breathing room to get into the market. And I really believe that, you know, we played a big role in helping these carriers get to market. So I'm talking about Flair Airlines. Now they were a carrier prior to the pandemic, but they've really reinvented themselves throughout the last year or so. And they liked what we had to offer here in this region. You know, it's a very wealthy, affluent area. There's a lot of disposable income. There's a lot of population. And we had one scheduled flight a day. So there was lots of opportunity to potentially take some of those 2.5 million passengers that go to other airports to get on flights. So we worked with Flair, and they're now here operating. They've been operating since May 1st. They are about to more than double their offerings here in the next 10 days, we're extremely excited. We also signed an agreement with another carrier called Pivot Airlines. You know, and I think their name is is unique because they did have to pivot. This is the former Air Georgian, who did a lot of work with Air Canada on an agreement where they would fly a lot of the shorter routes and with smaller aircraft. So they are going to resurrect themselves, or they have resurrected themselves into a scheduled carrier. And They have announced that they are going to be flying routes from here once pandemic restrictions allow. So we're extremely excited. We've worked very hard, very long to attract the attention of some of these carriers. And, you know, I think it's taken maybe a global pandemic in order to make the market conditions ripe for secondary airports. And I think it's not only Waterloo. I think you're seeing this across the country where Flair is really, you know, a low-cost carrier that really focuses on maybe some secondary markets. Their Swoop is also flying and doing very well from Hamilton and Abbotsford, so those types of airports as well. So secondary airports are a little bit more in play these days than maybe they would have been prior to the pandemic.
That's really, really dynamic, of course. What can the people and business units that call the region of Waterloo home do to help keep the new scheduled services plan and grow to the demand for these services and routes in the months and years to come?
Well, I guess the easy answer to that is use it or lose it.
Exactly.
You know, we've been told without a doubt that every decision that Flair is making or is going to make in the future is commercial.
Yes.
So if it doesn't make sense to run a route, then they're not going to run it. So, you know, we believe that they are serving cities where people want to fly to. We also understand that the pandemic has completely changed any patterns, although we are seeing growth since May 1st. And from my understanding, the forward bookings look quite good. And I think that there's a lot of pent-up demand that may skew things this summer, too. But Flair also competes on price, so they're going to entice people with low fares. And compete really with people who wouldn't normally travel and create their own demand. So their fares are going to create demand as well. And, you know, their business model is to control their costs. And that's what they're going to do, and that's what they're good at. So we're confident that there's enough of a base of population here to keep an airline going. And with their fares that they are advertising, I think that will, you know, ensure that their loads are quite healthy going forward.
They're certainly very dynamic. I mean, to pick up 13 737 8 maxes, right? That's a huge investment, and that's really exciting times as well. You know, very modern, high capacity, long range aircraft.
It is, and you know, we've seen it here the last 3 or 4 days. They've had it on our routes, so it's been really neat to see it here. And it does look quite different than the next gen sort of 700, 800 aircraft that we've been used to over the years here. But it's a good looking airplane, and I have yet to be on it, but I do want to try and sneak on one day and have a look and get that new airplane smell.
So. Oh, it's exciting, isn't it? Eh? Brand new technology aircraft, and it's all brand new and shiny and everything else. So how about charter services? I mean, are there any plans to restart that for the upcoming season, winter season?
Yep, so Sunwing has announced that they will be back this coming winter with service to Cancun. So they're... It's weekly service, which is always done well here. We're during the pandemic, or at the beginning of the pandemic, Sunwing actually based their airplanes here. So we had, I think, at one point 24 737s here.
Wow, that certainly occupies all your apron space.
Yeah, and we closed a runway. So, you know, it worked out because, you know, right, I think it was back in March, the end of March of 2020, nothing was really happening. So we had the ability to close the runway and park them. It was obviously a horrendous jolt to the industry, but we were glad we were able to help our friends at Sunwing out. And I think they were very appreciative of that as well. So it'll be nice to actually, the next Sunwing flight that comes here will be a revenue flight and have passengers going down to sunny Mexico starting in December.
Plans for WestJet, they currently have service to Calgary?
Yeah, so WestJet is, you know, obviously a great partner of ours. We've enjoyed WestJet service for 15 years.
Wow.
And with service to Calgary, and they obviously got hit hard too, but they always maintained a presence, so they did get down to one flight a week, but we're now currently at five, going to six in July, and should find out soon, but I understand we will be back to daily as of August. So great on WestJet that they've been able to fight this thing off and continue flying throughout the pandemic, and they're back to hopefully back to pre-COVID levels there.
Certainly very impressive that even during the worst of the worst of the worst, they still maintain one flight a week, which shows the importance of your city, right? And WestJet sees great value in it and services of Calgary to collect the points beyond. So, of course, you have all these aircraft planned or actually coming in. And your terminal and related facilities are only so big. I understand the reason why I'll do is earmark some dollars you mentioned earlier on in today's podcast. Can you share with us some of the short-term expansion plans to help enable the planned growth?
Yeah, sure. So I think we have, it's about $44 million total earmarked for various items. I think 35 of that will be in terminal building and airside improvements. And so what we're doing is we're basically doubling the size of our terminal building using some modular pre-engineered building. So they're built in a factory and then brought here and assembled on site. And that's really only to for the timing. We couldn't build traditionally quick enough. So what we're doing is a separate a domestic baggage claim building. And then a separate hold room. The hold room will fit 800 people, so pretty much four 737 departures at once. Today we could do one, maybe we've had two before, and it was very ugly.
Very crowded, yeah.
So, yeah, very crowded. But that also allows us then to expand our baggage hall, expand our CATSA area, expand our outbound baggage, and then CBSA also needs some attention, some expansion. So phase one, which we're pretty much done with the contracting, that's about a $25 million, and that will begin on July 12th. We just had our kickoff meeting today with our general contractor and the baggage contractor, and then these modular structures vendor. So it's all coming together. We're also doing a bit of airside work. We were fortunate enough to get some ACAP funding to do some improvements on the gates. So we're gonna do some concrete stands. With the larger aircraft, our apron really was never designed to handle the static load of these aircraft. So yeah, it's a lot of stuff, but we have a great team both here at the airport, as well as the consultant team. Plus, we have the benefit of, because we're the region of Waterloo, we also have a great facilities department that can help us with these things, and lots of procurement help and things like that. So we're really tapping into that stuff as well.
So when do you envision this phase of a terminal expansion to be complete so you can support the area carriers?
Yeah, so we're it'll be complete by the beginning of next summer. Okay. But we will have our domestic bag claim and two baggage carousels installed by Christmas. That's the plan. And then the hold room expansion done by about February and operational. And then the rest of the stuff would be built by next spring, summer. So the renovations of the existing terminal. So about a year from now, we should be pretty much complete.
So how many 737s can you park on the ramp at one time now?
Right now, four.
Four. And would an expansion allow you to grow that, or would it still be four aircraft?
Yeah, so we'll go to six. Plus an RJ. So we'd have seven gates.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
And, yeah.
Pretty exciting. How about parking? Will you have enough parking for all of the
Great question. We don't know yet. We think we're going to be okay for until next summer. And again, we don't really know what Flair's plan is for beyond sort of next summer and beyond, but we assume they want to continue to grow. So we think we're okay until next summer, and we're going to have to come up with a solution.
And of course, once Pivot begins operating, right, then they will certainly will want use of the space that you have when you're working so hard.
Yeah, Pivot has, because Pivot's using smaller aircraft, it doesn't have such a burden on the terminal building, like
right.
the 200 passenger or 189 at a time. But absolutely, Pivot has been, we've communicated with them constantly. We share our plans with them, and they buy into what we're doing as well. So
excellent,
an important partner.
Another pretty exciting thing about your airport is you just received an approved airport master plan. Can you share some of the highlights of your new master plan?
Well, it has been almost 5 years since we approved our master plan.
Oh boy, okay, that shows you how tuned I am. 5 years already, okay. So what are some of the highlights of your master plan?
It's ready for a refresh, yeah. But you know what, our master plan is... It really set the stage for what we're doing right now. So our, when I first got here when was it, 2009? We were just finishing the previous master plan. So I said, well, we need to have a new master plan. And that was... I wouldn't say met with some resistance, but master plans equal large dollars, right?
Yeah, not cheap.
So it was, anyways, it took some time. We put a team together. We built a master plan. We had a steering committee in place of some of our elected officials. And really the marching orders we got was, okay, we're not building things and they will come. You need to build it. You need to do this master plan in a way where you build it when they come. So we challenged the consulting team and the team that put the master plan together and really came up with a unique model where it's sort of a just-in-time delivery of airport infrastructure for, so we came up with triggers. So we said, okay, what's our existing capacity of our terminal building and runway capacity and apron? And we figured it out, and then we basically built triggers. So what do we need to do when we hit this trigger? And then what do we need to do when we hit the next trigger? And so on and so on. And we built it that way. Not where most airports that would see, 2 or 3 or 4% growth per year, at certain point you need to do certain things. So we knew that, much like the Billy Bishop experience, where they grew by, hundreds of percent or thousands of percent at a time, they needed a complete new airport. We knew that once things happened, that we were going to be in the same model. And here we are. We're seeing it happen. So much so where, we've jumped a couple of these triggers. And we're now needing to catch up. But we already had a whole bunch of work done in anticipation of that. So it really helped us. So our master plan really was a guiding document for what we're doing today. And we would have been, really behind and maybe would not have been able to accept Flair, because we knew that we couldn't get this done in time. And no one wants to have a crappy airport experience. So we don't want our community to try so hard to get them to use the flight and then say, well, I'm never going to go there again because, it was a horrible airport experience.
That experience was so challenging for the passengers.
We want to make sure that we give our residents and people who use the airport a good experience in the terminal. So they want to use it and tell their friends and, help support the local airport. So really, our master plan worked well for us. Again, it is almost 5 years old now, so we are about to refresh it. There's a few things that we've learned in those last 5 years that do need to change, but we believe that the general idea of the master plan is still intact. We're only going to build stuff as we have a need for it.
Yeah, you don't want to build a white elephant, right? And then nobody comes.
Correct.
right? So that's an excellent plan. I mean, you know, the way that you've done it, and the plan is still valid, as you said, but you need to tweak it and update it to reflect where things are going. How long was your longest runway?
7,000 feet. So we're also planning to extend our crosswind. So part of the master plan was to extend the crosswind runway. So we've done all that detailed design already. So we're 99% done with our design for our runway extension, which was a great experience. It was a lot of fun to play with these things on paper, and a lot of smart people put a lot of effort into this runway extension. So no, we're hopeful that we can work with our federal and provincial colleagues to secure some funding for this endeavor. We believe that viable airports should have a secondary option for aircraft in inclement weather, and we do not right now, obviously, for our small runway is 4,100 feet, so
yeah,
so
no too small for jets.
Carrier's going to use that. Yeah.
Right on. So as passenger traffic goes up, how easy or how difficult is it to get to the airport? Are there buses, taxis? Are there any future plans to connect to transit?
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess another great part of being part of the region of Waterloo is, we also own the transit company. So you'd think it would be easy just to call up and say, hey, put a bus here, but there needs to be a positive business case to do that. So this part of the region is really growing. For those who aren't really familiar, we're sort of on the east side of the region of Waterloo, right in the middle between, Cambridge, Guelph, Waterloo, and Kitchener, right? So we're kind of right in the middle between those cities. And this is really the last area of the region for sort of large industrial and large scale industrial and for job creation. So, there's been a lot of talk about a bus route through the little town where we are. So the airport's actually in a town called Breslau, and it's growing too. And there's been a lot of talk recently about a bus route through the town and to connect a couple of main transit hubs, and the airport would be part of that. So again, I think as we see more passenger growth, it makes it a bit easier to sell the idea of having a bus come through the airport, right? And it's not only a GRT or Grand River Transit bus, but also an intercity bus. So it makes some sense to maybe offer a bus to, into Toronto. I think a lot of people on a low-cost carrier, their final destination may or may not be the Waterloo region. They want to get into Toronto or into Niagara. So those options as well, people are looking for an economic way to get into those centers, and so we've had those discussions as well.
Yeah, that's very smart. Well, Chris, I'd like to thank you very much for taking part in our interview today about exciting news and developments at Waterloo International Airport. We compliment you as your continued excellent leadership, and also for the wisdom and insight from the town of Waterloo, the region of Waterloo, as to the clearly recognize the value of the airport and now beginning to reap the rewards. Thank you for taking part in today's podcast, and to the listeners, thank you for participating, and we look forward to the next podcast. Have a good day, everybody.